I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't gotta do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. 'Cause I make you ugly as soon as it drops. We're on a rampage, bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in dust 'cause we'll be crushing it up. Somebody say you better. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're about to witness is no illusion. And now we got the bass banging from here to Buckingham Palace. They're all moving. Hey Simon, working them up, turning them psycho. Everybody rock, let's bring the house down.
Morning, buddy, and happy Thursday. Here on the Jeff Calkins Show, we have some news from Dallas, Texas. What was this news, Jeffrey? You were telling me about it right before the show commenced.
So I apologize if I do not pronounce this correspondent's name correctly, but it's Garrett Hockey.
That's fine. Hockey. I like hockey.
Okay. It's H-A-A-K-E. Again, I'm sorry.
That's fine. Hockey.
I'm not trying to be
Carry on. Sail past
the Dallas superintendent just told him he's pretty sure there will be no Texas high school football this year.
Why would there be?
This is why I would like to point out this notion that I keep consistently hearing. By the way, your line about Ivy League football just means less yesterday was absolutely stunning.
Right.
Like, that was fantastic. But this idea that the SEC is just going to put their head down and lower their shoulder and play no matter what, it's not rooted in reality.
Right. Yeah, you just can't. I mean, like, there is a giant pandemic going on in Texas. And in the entire country there is.
If
but
they can
Texas,
cancel Texas high school football, they can cancel SEC football.
Anything. Yes, yeah. So, okay, today we have a ridiculously packed show, so I cannot tarry
fully
any
loaded.
Longer. Fully loaded. Like I like my potato skins.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a long. Where?
No chives.
Let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
Where in Memphis is there a great potato skin? Let's set aside all the issues bedeviling us. Or is a potato skin?
How do you feel about Huey's?
Or is the potato skin just an '80s thing? Because a '90s thing. Do people not care about potato skin?
I think, at least in my generation prefers cheese fries to potato skins. Yeah, I think that kind of replaced.
Well, the problem with potatoes, maybe potato skins are done. Maybe that's why. There was a place in D.C. when I lived there. My God, they had these chicken potato skins. The key with potato skins is you don't want much potato. You don't want a big potato-y thing. You want just loads of bacon.
Cheese.
And cream cheese.
Good stuff.
Sour cream. And yeah, and more bacon and more cheese and more bacon and good stuff. Yeah. Anyway.
My buddy Luke weighs in Belmont.
Great potato skins?
Yeah. Yep. He's 100% right on this.
Really?
Yeah.
Potato skins.
Belmont has good burgers.
Good wings, good burgers. We always get the burgers and the wings. Also a good French dip.
Yes, absolutely.
Very good French dip. My kids do that.
And terrible parking.
Really difficult parking. Yeah. You park at the bank. Okay, we're tarrying.
I'm just saying.
We're tarrying.
It depends on what hour that is.
Have you been towed from there?
Not towed, but that security guard's a little overzealous.
Anyway, today on the show, John McCullers is going to join us. I wrote about him in a column today at the Daily Memphian. You remember John. He was the one who said literally 2 months ago, he didn't see there much chance of being a whole lot of fans in Neyland Stadium in the fall. And my God, people went crazy over that. What a moron. Doesn't know what he's talking about. I went back and looked at some of the comments.
Were they delightful?
They said he's the Butch Jones of epidemiologists. He doesn't know S, et cetera.
And, nailed it.
And it is not with any glee that I resurrect this, because I would much have preferred that we have a full Neyland Stadium. It is a sense of profound sadness. But the chortling itself led to the issue, right?
Jeff,
We do have
breaking news.
Okay.
Breaking news here on 92.9 FM ESPN. It's brought to you by the Dell Technology Small Business Podference. Go listen at radio.com/Dell. According to Jason Munns, breaking news, WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational is to be held without spectators.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things that we're learning from Dr. McCullers. We'll talk to him about as well. So anyway, okay. We have John McCullers first. Then we have Chris Harrington, and then we have Jennifer Biggs, and then Chris Harrington.
Correct.
Yes. And then so that is the order of the day. In fact, let's bring him on right now. He is Dr. John McCullers, pediatrician in chief at Le Bonheur and associate dean of UT Health Sciences College of Medicine. And he is involved in reopening the University of Tennessee, in handling the pandemic here in Memphis, and all sorts of things. He is Dr. John McCullers. How are you, John?
Hey, I'm doing great this morning, Jeff. Good to be back on with you.
So what have we done wrong? It feels like everything's falling apart, John. What's the issue?
I think there's two issues right now. You know, we had expected to see an increase in cases as we opened the economy back up, got people back to work, and particularly in the fall as we get kids back to school, there was an expectation we'd see more cases. What we're seeing right now, though, is a big surge in cases in younger people and kind of school-age, working-age people who, you know, really aren't following the rules, I'd say, you know, are not social distancing or gathering together in groups, are not wearing masks the way they need to. And it's causing an impact. It's causing an impact in our care case numbers. It's causing an impact in the hospitals because they're getting in the hospital now, unlike earlier. The second thing we've done is we haven't done as good a job with the mask ordinance yet as we need to do. We need to have nearly everybody wearing a mask in public. That's what's going to get rid of this. And we've been kind of slow to embrace it here locally.
I'm breaking down those two things really quickly. The first one, I mean, can you – are you – that the testing is revealing a lot more young people testing positive, or you can trace it back to particular gatherings in bars or restaurants or backyards, or what do we know about those gatherings?
It's both of those. So we can look at the demand. The demand is for young people who have symptoms or who have been exposed to somebody who's positive. The positive cases are in young people. And increasingly, the patients who are in the hospitals locally are younger people in their 20s and 30s. And then when the health department does their contact tracing, they're tracing it back to, oh, I was exposed because I was in a bar at a party, or I was at a pool party or at somebody's house. And it's these gatherings where people just aren't social distancing, aren't wearing a mask, I guess because they're not as worried about it since disease isn't as bad as in old people. But, of course, the more people that get infected, those numbers catch up with you, and, we end up with young people in the hospital.
We do right now in Memphis, Shelby County, have young people in the hospital.
We absolutely do.
Okay. And then on the other one, on the mask ordinance, the county health department has finally said everyone must wear a mask. But there seems to be, particularly in the suburbs, there's a lot of, we don't want to mandate that people wear masks. There's a difference between suggesting and mandating. And I don't know if this is where health policy bumps into political whatever. But I is it frustrating from your perspective?
I wouldn't say it's frustrating as much as it's something we have to recognize and navigate. You know, we're in an era where politics drive a lot of the narratives that we see, and the wearing of masks is become a political narrative right now. The mayors of the municipalities and the counties of surrounding Memphis want to do the right thing. They want to make sure they're protecting their people. The impact there has been a little slower to come, so they've been a little slower to react in terms of things like closing down businesses and starting to wear masks. Memphis was the first to go ahead with that, led by the city council, and the health department, while supportive of that, wasn't sure they really had the statutory authority. So they had to really work through their levels of government and say, hey, are we allowed to do this? Is it enforceable? Because, of course, if you get a legal challenge, that's going to throw things into chaos. Once they had that answer back that said, yes, you can do it, it's enforceable, and you should be doing it, they went ahead with the countywide ordinance.
Where are we in terms of hospital capacity?
We're pretty close to the full right now. We still have some beds right now, but the problem is we don't have staff for those beds. So if you look at the hospitals, we had about 100 people in the hospital throughout the Safer at Home. As we opened back up, that went up to about 200. And then the last few weeks, it's just skyrocketed well over 300 and up into the 360s earlier this week. And, that doesn't seem like a whole lot of cases compared to the number of hospital beds we have across the entire region. But the truth is the hospitals here run 85 to 95% full all the time. And when you add that number of cases on top of it, it puts you right up to your limits. And, the next step is going to be the hospitals are going to have to work with their staff and cancel overtime and call people in and work extra shifts to staff more beds to take care of patients. If we still have demand, they're going to have to, shut down elective surgeries and free those beds up that would have gone to people who need surgery. So, that's the progression we'll see. We're hoping that it doesn't get to that, but that's certainly the direction we're headed.
You all along, you've said that we would have to adjust depending what happens with the reality and the numbers, et cetera. We've seen some adjustment as the mask ordinance and now the closing down of bars again. What other tools are there? Like in terms of adjusting, if we were to tighten again, it's hard to imagine there's going to be a stay-at-home order again. Like what other tools are there in the arsenal beyond getting us all to actually finally wear masks? What else is there?
I think you're right. We know we would have to evolve. We would have to learn as we went along. I think the reaction we saw this week with the closing of bars and limiting of restaurant hours is reactive to what we learned. We learned that if you open up restaurants and that have bars that people are going to stay late in the bars and are going to, you know, drink alcohol and do things that you normally do when you drink alcohol, and that was going to cause a rise in our cases. So we're starting to close those things down. We'll continue to track this, and if we see other things that pop up that, you know, are driving the epidemic, then we'll address them with, you know, whatever authority we have. But we're not going to go backwards. We're not going to shutter all businesses again. We're not going to go back to safer at home. We're going to start to concentrate more on the vulnerable population. So if case counts are rising, well, we're going to try to protect the elderly and the vulnerable. And we're going to try to work with our particular underserved populations where there's a disproportionate impact. Right now, we're seeing a lot of disease in our Latino communities. So we're doing a lot of outreach there, a lot of testing there, and trying to really concentrate on that as you know, one of the epicenters of the local epidemic.
I do want to get to sports here in just a little bit. Before I do that, not only are we not going to go back, we're going to have schools opening before long and universities opening before long. Let's take schools first. Decision was made. People will be able to either choose for their kid in-person learning or virtual learning. What do you think of that approach? And I don't know how old your kids, I think they're out now, but how would you make that decision if you had a kid in elementary school, middle school, or high school?
Well, my youngest two are 12 and 14, and it'll be at MUS this year, and I want them there, okay? You know, that's where they're going to...
Go Owls, Dr. McCullough.
Yeah, there you go.
That's where they're going to learn the best, really. And we want to get kids back to school. We have to get kids back to school. We knew it was going to have to be in some sort of hybrid mode because we want to be able to practice some social distancing in the school. And the way schools are configured, you can't fit every kid in the classroom. So you're going to have some that are either at home and you know, with high school kids, maybe that's pretty, you know, maybe that's not so bad. Maybe that you can accomplish that, have them come half the week and stay home half the week and work. Younger kids, it doesn't really work. They can't watch themselves. The parents have to work. Maybe they're dependent on school for their meals, as well as the supervision aspects. And so maybe the kids are in the classroom half the day, and then the other half the day they're spaced out in the gym or the cafeteria and are learning in that setting. So we knew we were going to have to deal with that. I think Shelby County was smart in giving parents, some parents a choice to kind of opt into staying home the whole time, because that allows them then, once they know how many are going to stay home, they can better plan for what's the capacity, how do they, parcel out the teachers and that sort of thing.
If we're already seeing this kind of spike from bars and restaurants, once you get, whatever your best intentions are, once you get elementary school kids jammed, they don't know the word. They social distancing is not in the lexicon of your average elementary schooler. Is it a potential disaster? Like, what do you expect this to look like?
You know, I think when we started to think about this back in March, I was worried that this was going to be a disaster, because exactly what you say, Jeff, you know, kids are not going to social distance. They're going to do the wrong things. We know that, you know, influenza virus epidemics are driven by the schools. Kids are the main transmitters of the influenza virus, and they pass it back and forth in school, and they take it back into the household. And so we worried about that with COVID. Now, we've learned more about this particular virus, and it's interesting. Kids don't seem to get infected at the same rate that adults do. And, you know, for a long time, we said, well, that's just because the kids are at home, right? We send them home from school. They're not in contact with each other. But there's more and more data coming out that they just don't get the virus as much. And maybe that's, you know, one reason you could think about is we know most kids are asymptomatic with this. They're not coughing. They're not sneezing. They're not having the runny, drippy nose and stuff. And we know if you're asymptomatic, you have less virus. So there's less virus. They're not, you know, doing all that stuff that might make the virus spread. Maybe they just don't spread it as easily. Maybe there's some biological reasons why they don't spread it as easily. But if those are true, if we don't see as much transmission between kids or from kids to teachers, then maybe it's going to be better than we think. Maybe it's going to be okay. And I'll draw your attention to one piece of information that I think really supports that, and that's we haven't closed down all daycares. You know, daycares are essential businesses. You know, essential workers have to send their kids somewhere when they're at the hospital or wherever. And so daycares have stayed open throughout this, many of them anyway. And we're not seeing outbreaks in the daycares. We're seeing a few cases here and there, but we're not seeing outbreaks. And you'd expect if this was flu, we'd see outbreaks in the daycares, and we're not seeing it with COVID.
Universities taking all sorts of different approaches. I know you're involved with Tennessee's effort to reopen, all kinds of hybrid approaches to all of this. Harvard's doing one thing. Tennessee's doing another thing. Memphis, is doing it. Rhodes is doing another thing. What's that going to look like? And how confident are you that that will be successful in all its permutations?
Yeah, I think with the universities, you are seeing just a wide range of approaches from online only to, hey, we plan to be there in person to the hybrid model. So I think the hybrid models are the one that is most prevalent.
DJ Matt, I'm a driver here.
Where most people are going to start.
Little crosswind.
At least. And this is another one where the planet's not going to survive the battle. We're going to learn as we get into it what works and what doesn't. I said at the beginning, it's going to be impossible to make kids that age social distance. And we're learning that right now because those are the demographic age groups that are getting the virus right now across the southeastern United States. So I expect this is going to be some stop and start, some trial and error, and maybe you have to shut the schools down for a couple of weeks, a few times, and then maybe you settle into a routine that's workable as you learn from it. But it's another one of those where people put a lot of value on the campus experience and on the face-to-face learning and being in a learning environment with other peers who are going through the process. You learn as much out of the classroom as you do in the classroom in these settings, and there's tremendous value. And so there's going to be every effort to do it. It's going to be difficult and complicated and a mess, I think, at times. But we'll figure it out. We'll get through it. I'm confident.
Talking to John McCullers from both Le Bonheur and UT Health Sciences College of Medicine. All right, on to sports. It was depressing to see that MLS is already having such problems with their quote-unquote bubble as the NBA starts off in their bubble. How do you think it's going to go? Let's for the NBA. How do you think it's going to go for the NBA?
It's hard to say, Jeff. You know, we knew we were going to see some positive cases. We knew we were going to see some reluctance from the players to be exposed and to put themselves in there. And I think we're going to see, you know, some that aren't following the rules, frankly. You know, if you think NBA players are going to sit inside a hotel room and eat boxed lunches, you know, I got another thing for you here. There's going to be some problems that occur. What you don't want to see is what you saw with MLS Dallas, where a whole team is infected and you have to pull a team out of the playoffs, right? How's the NBA going to deal with that? Are they just going to shut down, or are they going to, you know, forfeit that team?
From an epidemiological perspective, though, how likely is it? I understand there will be within a team social distancing. How likely is it that if player A gets it from wherever, maybe he got it from the person who served him the box lunch, right? Or maybe that's where. Let's pretend he wasn't out, you know, at the strip club or something. Let's say he got it from contact with those who aren't in the bubble. How likely is it that it can be just player A who gets it as opposed to a whole team getting infected?
I think it depends on the protocols and how the teams, you know, the more money you have to do this, the better you can isolate every player in their own suite, right? If you're sharing a locker room, you're sharing common equipment for working out, you're more crowded, then it's less likely to succeed. So the lower levels of professional leagues are going to have more trouble, I think, than the NBA is because they can throw a lot of money at it and put in a lot of protections. So for the NBA, I think if you see transmission, it's probably going to be on the court. And it's probably going to be asymptomatic players that, you know, don't get caught by the process, and the process is pretty thorough, that are then going to transmit it to a few others on the court. I don't think we see a whole team wiped out in the NBA, but in the NBA, if you miss a couple of stars, you know, there goes your season, right?
Right. Okay, but contrast that with college football, where you just can't. Like, the University of Memphis cannot have everyone in their private suite. So even if you tried to play without fans, it looks like a substantially higher hurdle.
Yeah, and these are students as well. And so they're going to be around other students and probably doing the things that students do, and which means getting together with others. And no matter how dedicated the team is to the season, you're going to have some problems. And I think you'll see if in college football or whatever, sport like that goes back, you're going to see cases and you're going to see a lot more of them than you're going to see in the NBA. And it's hard to predict, where that's going to go. I know the Ivy League is basically saying we're not even going to deal with it. We're closing down all fall sports and we'll reassess it in the spring. Whether that happens at major levels, major college levels or not, I think is a really interesting question.
I resurrected the quote that you were not speaking officially, and I've gone out of my way to make that clear when you were skeptical about fans being at Neyland Stadium in the fall. That was in no official capacity that you said that when you were on with us the first time around. But that fan experience is still problematic, is it not? Like putting that many people in, whether it's the Liberty Bowl, Neyland, or anywhere else, or in FedEx Forum in December, it's going to be a challenge, yes?
Yeah, it's really difficult to do it in a way that is medically safe, right? So if you say, hey, I want to protect my players. I don't want to have a super spreader event in my fans where maybe some of my donors who are vulnerable because of age are infected and are sick or dead, right? So if you say that, well, we can give you some guidelines that will probably work or probably will mitigate the risk to some extent, but it ends up being very few fans and a lot of things that, kind of take away from the experience and cost more money and makes you say, is this really even worth it to me to do it? And I can tell you, we just went through this locally with the PGA. And PGA was fantastic to work with. They wanted the medical advice. They wanted to be innovative. How can we put on this FedEx tournament here in Memphis? How can we have some thousands of fans, not tens of thousands of fans, or hundreds of thousands, like might come for a weekend here in Memphis. But how can we do this with some thousands of fans? And we worked out a way that we thought it could be done safely. And again, great working with them and had a plan and had approved them to have fans here. And, earlier this week, Ohio, who was going to be the first tournament to have fans come back for PGA, said, we're canceling it. We're not going to allow you to do it because cases are surging and it's not safe. And the PGA just said, okay, we're pulling the plug. We're not going to have fans at all this year at any venue. And, that's, you worry that's what's going to happen with other sports. It's really complex. You can make up these, this is how we'll do it in this really complex way that we think will be safe, but something happens or it doesn't work or, like we talked about before, a player gets sick or a player's family member gets sick, and, you end up shutting it down.
So just to be clear, they made it – when they pulled – the PGA notified you that they're not – they're just not going to do it in Memphis anymore either. Like the fan – you had a fan plan, and they pulled the plug on it in Memphis as well.
Yes, and for they're going to – they just said for all events going forward, we're not going to have fans. We just can't – we don't think we can do it safely.
Right. Last thing, I know you have to go. A couple things I really want to hit you with very quickly. People point to deaths. The skeptics still say, hey, the deaths are not where they used to be. This is all big scare. The numbers are horrifying if you look at cases, but the deaths, my gosh, we should be having a party. The deaths are down, and this is fear porn from Jeff Calkins and John McCullers and anyone else who's talking about it. What's the answer to that?
Yeah, the answer is that's good news. We are seeing a decrease in deaths currently. There's a couple of factors at play there. One is most of the deaths early were from nursing homes. We've gotten better at the nursing homes. So we're not seeing outbreaks in nursing homes. We're not seeing those deaths that were really driving up the numbers early. The second is we've seen this shift in the demographics. So it's younger people right now who are predominantly getting infected. They're less likely to die. We still see some that die. We've seen some die here in Memphis. But it's much less. So the death rate's going to be a lot lower if it's, 20-somethings and 30-somethings that are getting infected. And the third is we're getting better at treating it. you know, early on we didn't know how to treat it. We've got algorithms now. We've got, you know, steroid therapy now that appears to work pretty well if you do it right. And we've actually been doing that since very early on in Memphis. We've got, you know, one drug, remdesivir. We've got convalescent plasma. Those help a little bit. And overall, we're able to kind of rescue a few more people. Now, my concern is, okay, we've got this big surge in cases in 20, 30, 40-year-olds. Are we going to see a secondary surge in, you know, older persons who are their parents or their grandparents? And then we're going to see the death creep back up because that's who's going to get into trouble in the hospital and we're going to have more difficulty with. So that hadn't happened yet, but that's really my concern right now is that secondary wave that's, you know, from the young people infecting older people.
And last thing, give me 30 seconds. Any hope for a vaccine anytime soon?
You know, I think my thoughts evolving on this, it looks like we have a lot of vaccine candidates that are going to come through sometime in the next 6 to 12 months. I think we're going to end up with, you know, a few in the spring that might work some, maybe not very well, but, you know, maybe works a little bit. Maybe it protects you. Your disease isn't as bad if you still get the virus. And we'll, you know, we'll kind of, they'll compete in the market and we'll learn more about them and maybe we'll emerge with a couple that, you know, have some impact. I don't think we're going to have one vaccine that suddenly cures the thing in the next 6 months, but maybe we're going to see several different things that have some impact.
You've been great once again. I really do appreciate you taking the time, and it is a great service to the community. We appreciate it, John.
Very welcome, Jeff. Anytime.
Thanks very much.
Have a great day.
That is Dr. John McCullers. We will come back and... we got Jennifer Biggs next, among other things. We have a busy show today. Jennifer Biggs, Chris Harrington, and trivia. All of that today. We got to take a break. Back in a moment, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hey, this is Gary Parrish, and I've been telling you about Cooper Systems for years, the amazing work that Lee and Lauren Cooper have been doing at Cooper Systems over in the Mount Moriah office park. In fact, for 8+ years, because Cooper Systems, they've been a sponsor of the Gary Parrish Show since day one, and they've never left. That's a testament to them. It's a testament to you, and you've heard me tell you about the great work they're doing at Cooper Systems for a long, long time. Now it's time to hear from you guys.
Got a great deal on an Apple Mac from Cooper Systems. Literally half the price of the big box stores. I just searched before I heard about Cooper.
From the road a lot, and one day my laptop got the epic blue screen of death, and I thought I lost all my files. Cooper Systems was able to retrieve everything and even installed a new drive to make my computer faster and better than ever.
I'm one of those people Gary always refers to as the looking up stuff you're not supposed to guy. Yep, that leads to computer viruses. Cooper can take care of you, and like the ad says, they won't judge you.
That's Cooper Systems. Call them 360-9679 on the web. You can check them out at coopersystems.com.
When good sleep seems impossible, Mattress Firm's Rest Assured Promise checks all the sleep boxes. The option to shop online, in-store, or by phone with a sleep expert? Check. Special financing? Check. Free shipping to your door? Check. A king-size mattress for the price of a queen, plus a free adjustable base with a qualified purchase of just $6.99? Check. Find your mattress at Mattress Firm. Offer valid with qualifying purchase. Restrictions apply. Valid at participating locations only. Visit mattressfirm.com for complete details.
Think about this little bicycle bell. It may seem small, but it comes from a small business, one of thousands on eBay, powered by millions of people, all working to get you exactly what you want. That's no small thing. That's everything. Get your thing on eBay.
I absolutely love my dog, but the constant shedding, not so much. But then I got a Swiffer Sweeper pet kit, and it is amazing. These super thick cloths pick up a crazy amount of hair. Just look at all that. And that was from just one swipe. And the best part? Sweeper's so much easier to maneuver than a broom or a vacuum, easily getting around chairs and under the couch. You're right. Now I can focus on you, not your shedding. Swiffer Sweeper Pet Kit. Because shed happens.
You've been camping in your backyard, cycling in your living room. You've been enjoying rain showers in your bathroom. Campfires on your TV screen. You've been counting stars and birds from your window and holding family cookouts in the kitchen. Now, get ready to go. Go on a real vacation. Take the wheel at your nearest RV dealer or at GoRV.com.
The sizzle is real this summer, and the weather won't be the only thing heating up. Because right now, your chance to win Red Hot Cash is heating up, too. Thanks to the new Red Hot Instant Games. So the next time you're out, why not pick one up? Then stay in, stay cool, and stay hot with Red Hot Instant Games. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing, summer-escaping fun. Please play responsibly.
Yankee Doodle wanted fun for just a single dollar. Found a jackpot in the millions and began to holler. Lotto America, look it up! The prize is getting bigger. Mind the rules and play today and you could be a winner. Go to town on Lotto America and put the country's hardest working game to work for you. Lotto America, from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
Enjoy Mexican cuisine with today's Perks Deal. Half off $50 to margaritas. From downtown to Atoka, there's a margaritas near you. Get yours at getmyperks.com.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios. Invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
My God, the news of the day is just ridiculous. We have in Texas, the superintendent of schools, is that who it was?
Dallas superintendent.
The Dallas superintendent saying he does not believe there will be high school football in Texas this year. We have the PGA Tour making it official that there will be no fans in Memphis this year at the Memphis Golf Tournament. And all sorts of things breaking here on the show. And then we had an interview with John McCullers that we could sit here and
dissect
for the next hour. And if we have time, we may get into some of that. Again, we're about to be joined by Jennifer Biggs, then Chris Harrington, and then we're doing trivia. Because why not? And joined now by Jennifer Biggs from the Daily Memphis. Jennifer, how are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm all right. How about you?
I'm good on Twitter.
Crazy,
are you being active on Twitter
stuff,
again?
Right?
You come and go on Twitter. You're very active on Facebook.
Yeah.
And you come and go on Twitter. Should I give your Twitter handle again?
You know what I really like? I just like it when you just tweet it out for me. You've already got this Twitter thing. That's why I like it. Let's do it like that.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah,
I'll just tweet
perfect.
Out her. I'll tweet out her stories
that.
for her. You should read them. Jennifer has been absolutely tearing it up here over at the Daily Memphian. Read her every single day. I wanted to talk to you because obviously the news of the week is that bars are closing and restaurants with bars, whatever, are. What is happening? What has been the level of confusion over this, and what has been the source of the confusion over this?
Well, the source of the confusion, it started when we had the press conference on Tuesday, and they referred to bars closing because there is no classification in the state of Tennessee. There's liquor by the drink laws, and there is no such thing as a bar. There was bars long ago, but you had to serve food in a bar, and you know, little quotes around that, for many, many, many years. I mean, can't even tell you going how far back, but you know, 80s, 70s, perhaps.
So when they said bars are going to be closed, there's no such thing as bars. Is that
right.
The idea?
There was basically nothing you could close because if it said it did. So the information we were getting was saying, you know, anything that doesn't rise to the level of a limited service restaurant. Well, that's nothing for the most. I mean, if it is, it's just some little place somewhere that you know, nobody even knows about because it's so tiny and off the radar. But then they continued. We had conversations, and they continued. They worked on this all night, Tuesday night, and getting after 11 o'clock on to midnight or something, they came up with the language saying that limited service restaurants would be the ones that would close because those are bars. And that, when you think of a bar, you think of a place you want to go have a cocktail, a place that sells at least 50% of the income comes from liquor, then it's a bar. 50% or more, but even at 50%, if you break half and half food and liquor, then you're a limited service restaurant. Now,
those are closed totally. If you get
midnight.
More than half or more of your income from liquor, alcohol, etc., than as of two nights ago. That was Atlanta. At midnight.
No, it's last night. Midnight last night.
You closed. Okay.
Right. But here's the interesting thing is that, you know, you have some places that are obviously bars that are limited service restaurants that won't be closing, because when you apply for a license with, you know, to serve liquor, you have to have a license from the Tennessee Alcohol Beverage Commission. And when you apply for one, if you can get a restaurant license, it's much less expensive than getting a license for a limited service restaurant. It can vary. It depends on the size of the place, but it can be as inexpensive as $900 a year for a restaurant, up to $5,000 a year for a limited service restaurant. So some places maybe they fudged, and so now you know a place that's a bar, and it's not on the list that's being handed out by the TABC when we called and asked for it, and they've been very helpful, by the way. They were great, and they have no. You know, they gathered this information for us and gave it to us. So if you were kind of honest and you're paying more, then you're on the list. And if you maybe fudged and said, I'm a restaurant, I'm not a limited service restaurant, you pay less for your liquor license, and you get to stay open. So it's a bit of a mess. And that's where we are today.
Do you feel comfortable? And if not, that's fine. Do you feel comfortable telling me the name of what is apparently a bar but is still open because it's listed as a restaurant?
Well, I think that there are many – well, here we get into a different distinction, but obviously there are plenty of places on Beale Street that aren't on there. But Beale Street, as it turns out, they're exempt because they're in a historic district. But I think you
Wait,
could
so
also –
Wait, so all the Beale Street places are not closing?
They're going to have to close at 10 p.m., but no, they don't have to. They're not going to be closed. And that's something that I'm actually working on right now. So you're getting the scoop here before we're even putting it on the daily 10 p.m.
What's the 10 p.m. rule? The 10 p.m. rule is that
10 p.m. rule is all restaurants have to shut down by 10 p.m. and people have to be out of them by 10:30. That also starts today.
Okay.
So that's any restaurant.
All right, and what's been the reaction to
and
this?
And then, wait, let's go to one more thing. Because this is the thing that it has people just kind of up in arms. So also in this new directive, this, by the way, does not bother me, and I want to be clear about that, and I'd like to hear your opinion on it too, but it bothers a lot of people. They're asking for your name and your phone number when you go to a restaurant, and, of course, that's for contact tracing.
Right.
If someone shows up, if somebody has COVID and you're there, then they have the restaurant maintains records for 30 days that they can turn over to
and
the
a
health department.
And did I see in a seating chart too? They have to have a seating chart.
Mm-hmm.
They have to keep it for 30 days. A seat of where, who sat where. What a burden on all these restaurateurs, by the way.
It is indeed a burden on the restaurateurs. However, some of the restaurateurs have told me it's not that we mind doing it, it's that we mind, you know, that people are walking out. They don't want to give us the information.
Well, here's the thing. My view of it is I'm terrible about privacy. Like, there are some people who are absolutely vigilant about guarding their privacy at all turns, right? They're particularly, I mean, in the world of social media, they want to have their – and I'm just not. Like, I'm terrible about it.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't really
Everything's
care.
Everything's public.
I don't give a flip. If you knew I was at this restaurant X and such a night – good for you. I don't care. But I understand there are people who do, and I actually think that is a more legitimate, if you just value your privacy, I think that is, I won't look at that person as, what kind of a moron are you? What kind of a non-team player are you? As the same way I do someone who won't wear a mask. If you don't want to give up your privacy and you choose not to go to a restaurant because you don't want, that's fine. That's how you live your life.
But is it fine? And I don't know the answer. Does the restaurant have to say, well, then I'm sorry, you can't come in? Do they have to enforce that? That's not fair.
I see. It's not fair to put that on the restaurant. Is it fair to put it on restaurant to put on grocery stores, wear a mask regulations?
Exactly right. Do you have to check in with the grocery store when you get there? Do you have to? And the restaurant industry does, I think, legitimately feel that they have some stronger rules being imposed on them than, say, grocery stores or
You don't have to leave your name when you go into. You don't have to put your name and you go into a Lowe's. So
no,
why,
you don't.
Yeah. So.
Well, but here is, you know, another distinction is you're in a restaurant longer, so you're sitting there. You can get, if you're exposed, the chances are you have more of a dose than you do if you just happen to pass somebody, you know, walking through the aisle.
And practically, they do have the ability to do it in a way that Lowe's could not, really. Like, you can ask it of them because they can do it. Like, that is something they can do.
And they have authority over the restaurants. Health department has authority over the restaurants. I'm not sure if they have authority over stores. I would guess they do. I guess they have authority over everything in a public health crisis. I mean, that's, you know, something that I'm not qualified to speak on, but it would seem to me that they would be the ultimate authority right now.
None of this would be a problem if people were respectful. In other words, if people would just be, you go to a restaurant, you say, hi, I'd love to table for two. And they say, okay, what's your social security number? They don't say that. I'm joking. They say, I need your name and your phone number and whatever, and we're going to keep that for 30 days. And then the person says, ooh, I don't feel comfortable with that. Thanks anyway. I'll come back when I don't have to do that. That would be fine if people, but the problem is that half the people who you say, half the people will object, won't just object. They'll say, you communist, you know, whatever, I can't believe this. They'll make a scene. They may pull out a gun. They're like, and they're just, if people would be polite and reasonable and understanding, this would be a lot easier for everybody.
It would be. And I do think, again, something that bothers me the least of all this, because I think it's such a simple thing to do. I always make a reservation when I'm going to a restaurant or somebody. I mean, it may not be me because I may be reviewing and I don't want to use my name, whatever, but they already have that information. I'm accustomed to giving a name and a telephone number to a restaurant anytime I'm going to one. But, I mean, you know, does this apply? And I've asked the question, I don't have the answer. Does this apply if you go and sit down in a Wendy's? And I'm not even sure if a Wendy's is open. I don't know. I never go to fast food. Are fast food restaurants open in the dining rooms? Do you know? Have you been in one?
As it happens, this is a terrible thing. As it happens, yesterday, after this radio show, I went to Taco Bell, and I looked at the drive-thru line, and there were 18 cars in the drive-thru line. I parked. I didn't know if it was going to be open, honestly, because I've been in states lately where it has not been. Illinois, because all the bathrooms are closed, too, because all the McDonald's are closed. So there's just drive-thru. But here the Taco Bell was open. Yes, you can walk into a Taco Bell and get a bean burrito and a spicy tostada and a medium Diet Coke because I know.
Because you know that order is available.
I know that order is available.
You know you can do that.
Yeah. I didn't sit down and eat, but anyway.
But there were chairs that were there.
There were people. Actually, there was someone literally there working, had his laptop open working. I'm like, at a Taco Bell. Like, I mean, it's anyway. So here's my question. Yeah. What's the reaction to all this been among restaurateurs? A, having to deal with it all, but how devastating is it? They had weathered the first thing, they'd gotten to reopen. They had taken their time, maybe, and made sure they'd done it responsibly and cautiously and everything else. And all of a sudden, they're battered by this. What's it been like?
They are absolutely, I won't say devastated. They're angry. Particularly the ones who feel like, wait, you know, why am I being closed? Because I have this license correctly, and I know that, you know, Joe down the street doesn't. And why isn't he on the list if I'm on the list? You know, so then it does sort of come out on, you know, who's doing what. And when people have brought up specific places to me, I've emailed the state and said, can you check and see? And they've said, no, they have a restaurant license. So that's something that I'm working on. I would talk more about it with you, but I don't want to.
And let me ask you one other question. Just in terms of the financial future of these restaurants, I think we'll see more probably, sadly, closing for good. But another reason is the loans are running out, right? So,
well, the loans are running out, but they did have, you know, the loan forgiveness ended up being a little bit better than they thought it was going to be when they first did. They had no idea what it was going to be when they took out the loans. They were just told, hurry, 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 the money will run out. You have to get it now, without even knowing if you'd have to pay it back or what. So now maybe early June, they changed it to where you can spend less on employees, a little bit more on other expenses. You have a little bit longer to use the money through the end of the year instead of through the end of June or July. And you can, but you still have to apply for forgiveness. So, yeah, they have the money. They can still have the money forgiven. The criteria for forgiveness is more lenient now than it was back when they took the money out. So they still have that. But there is, as far as I know, no other round of money coming. But you still have to, I mean, you can't, even if they could go above 50%, which they can't, feasibly do right now. They say they can go 100%. The health department is you don't have to have this 50% seating restriction, but you have to have distance between tables, so it's still 50% because they have to have the distance in there. And restaurants do believe, there are restaurateurs who are telling me, we believe we will also be closed down again within a couple of weeks. Because if the numbers continue to rise, then that could be catastrophic.
I want, we're going to close on a happy note here. Tell me something good you've eaten lately, A, and B, what are your favorite outdoor eating areas in the patios in the city of Memphis?
Love Acre, and I have not eaten this because it just starts back today, but the WJ Burger comes back to Acre today. It's this original gourmet burger.
And what is the WJ?
Wally Joe.
Okay, the Wally Joe. And what is it?
It's a burger. It's a big burger with truffle cheese, and it's a homemade bun it's a horseradish bun. If I ever ate this thing, it was years ago, and I don't remember it, but I've seen it on Facebook, and I hope to be able to get one tonight. Thursdays only, and you have to get it to go. It comes with hand-cut fries and everything. So Acre is a great place to eat outside.
The WJ Burger. Well, on this topic, there's Erling Jensen has a ridiculous burger.
Oh, right? I know it. Yes.
The River whatever Inn, the one, what's the one there in the
River Oaks. River, that burger is awesome.
River Oaks. I mean, I'm talking now the high end burgers.
High end burgers, that's right.
Folks Folly has a really good burger.
They don't have it right now.
They don't.
Not right now.
Okay. So which of the high end burgers is the king of high end burgers?
Without thinking it through too much, I'm probably gonna say River Oaks right now, but I will have another. I will
think about the
WJ Burger as soon as I get that. I have something else planned for dinner tonight, but I may just go get one just to try it so I can go ahead and write about it anyway. There are a lot of nice places for eating outside though, and I really do think that's something people should. Tsunami has put up this wonderful little parking lot oasis with twinkly lights everywhere. I had a reservation last week. We had to cancel because of rain, because it was a really, really rainy night. But that's, that's a new place for eating outside. And wouldn't it be great if the city and county folks could jump on, like some of these other cities have, and close off some parking lots?
Why don't we do that? I was up in northern Michigan. They've closed off Front Street, which is the main drag there, and basically the whole street's a patio. It's fantastic.
It would be great, and we're so much safer outside than we are inside. People will eat out there. We'd love it. So, and by the way, the burger, I guess Kelly still has that burger on his menu. I don't know if he does or not, but that burger that he had put on the Iris Bar menu was fantastic.
So, I never had it.
I hope it's still on the menu. I'm still certain it is. I've been, but I didn't get the burger. And he's got a whole new patio set up there, too, which is also really, really nice. Lots of outdoor seating. Anybody that can do outdoor seating is doing it because they know that's where people want to be. Karen's got her place out
I've never
behind.
Been to that little setup there. Is that's behind Beauty Shop? Where is it? And what are
she's got it in front of Beauty Shop. She's got it behind Beauty Shop. But she's got these domes. She's put. Karen always does the quirkiest things.
This is Karen Carrier.
Really
for
fun
people.
Things.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Karen Carrier, I'm sorry, at the Beauty Shop in Cooper Young. And so she's put up these two domes that are air conditioned. But of course, you're kind of eating inside.
I was going to say, does a dome make it inside as opposed to outside?
It does to me, yes. But her deal is, come with your family or do whatever and get a dome. And you can do that. And it is kind of cool looking.
You can get your personal dome. You can get your own dome. You can get your own dome, your own personal dome.
Yes, I think if you have between 6 and 12 people, you can get your own dome. You have to check those numbers, people, if you call or find out, tell her how many people you have. But there is a limit, I think, to still how many people we can have in a dining party. But again, that's not one table. They're kind of spread out in there. One of the best things I've eaten since I've gone back post-shutdown eating is the mussels and frites that Karen does at Beauty Shop. It was brand new on the menu when I went, and it's this, you know, lemongrass and ginger and coconut milk and butter and all this fabulous stuff on top of these big fat mussels, and the skinniest little pommes frites you've ever seen. It was fantastic. Yeah. There's so much good food out there. You still haven't been out to eat, have you?
No, I did go out to eat. I've eaten at one place, that new place behind, next to Gibson's,
Magnolia in May?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Okay. Well, good.
But I meant, because they have a little outdoor area there.
They do.
Honestly.
They have a real table.
And I think they're the folks who own it used to own the Grove Grill. And
it's his son, but yeah, right.
I like the Grove Grill. But that's it. I haven't been out. And then, of course, the Taco Bell. Thank you, Jennifer. We appreciate it.
Glad to have you back, Jeff.
Read her stuff at the Daily Memphis. How much have you eaten out, Jeffrey?
In town?
Yeah, any at all?
Let's see. I went to Huey's one night. I went to Soulfish with my dad and brothers one day. And we're scheduled to go to Southern Social first date night since getting married on Saturday night.
Good for you. I may do that, WJ Burger. I got to get something for my kids one of these nights and bring them dinner. They're staying with their mom now.
Yeah, Acre does not suck.
You know what? I'd only been to Acre once, and I thought the portions were too small because I'm a big fat American.
No,
but evidently that's changed, and it's a beautiful place. Wally Joe's great. But you can't make, I mean, it's not going to be like a crystal sized burger, is it?
No. You're not getting a slider that's disguised.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not getting a $28 slider now.
Back to John McCullers very quickly, by the way. Among the things he said that I thought were fascinating, honestly, I thought one of the most and this is, I'm picking out something hopeful.
Sure.
The fact that daycares have been open all along and that we haven't traced any outbreaks to daycares gives us hope for schools. I think that's great. Don't you? I mean, that there's a little glimmer of positivity there. I found that to be interesting. He has always been, and by the way, everything he said has come true. Like, there was the whole summer is going to knock this out. And John, the first time he was on the show, came on and said, yeah, that's not true. It's just not true. And on the subject of vaccines, he has been, Jeff, we still don't have like what was the last one? The 2012 flu, the bird flu.
SARS.
Whatever. Yeah, SARS. We still don't have a vaccine for that. Like, this idea that we're going to have a vaccine within a, he's been a skeptic in terms of what, and hopeful and not. He said within the next year or 18 months, he believes we will have a number of vaccines which will have an impact. Now, everyone wants the silver bullet vaccine that everyone's going to magically get, maybe put it like fluoride in your drinking water,
yes,
and we're all going to have it and
problem solved.
Once again, it's much more of a piecemeal thing, but for John and what he's talked about before, that was more hopeful than typical. Still very much a skeptic on the idea of fans in stands, right? And this is where the golf thing comes in.
Yep.
At some point, and we now know that there are going to be no fans at the World Golf Championship in Memphis, they came up with a plan for very limited number of fans. And then they just pulled the plug on it because what happened in Ohio, like that wiped out that tournament. They
Correct.
Just said, the hell with it. We're just not going to do it. It's not worth it.
It
right?
really was players testing positive more and more at a higher frequency.
And the numbers are going the wrong way and everything else. And so they just pulled the plug. And if you are pulling the plug on fans at a golf tournament, acres and acres and acres of land available, and you're saying we can't have fans at a golf tournament, what does that indeed say about the Liberty Bowl?
Oh, no chance.
Now, in fairness, he said they worked with the World Golf
sure.
Championship, and that they...
I'll just see if... I'll keep it literally as simple. I'm not even going to point the finger at so that... One of the biggest golf courses I've ever played in my entire life in terms of acreage, land, everything, is Whistling Straits. Whistling Straits is still scheduled to host the Ryder Cup. They've moved it back to next year.
Right.
They moved it because at the end of the day, the Ryder Cup is the PGA of America's single biggest revenue stream.
Right.
And so they're moving it because they know they can't have fans this year.
Right. Now, he did say they came up with a plan to have a very limited
yes.
number of fans. And I suspect when it comes to high school college football, if there is college football at the Liberty Bowl, they will work with the Liberty Bowl to come up with a very limited number of fans. I don't think in the end it'll matter because I suspect there won't be college football this fall. That's my current suspicion. But they'll probably figure out a way to get 5,000 fans in the Liberty Bowl if they do that, right?
So yesterday, one of the big notes in terms of fans and stands was the Ravens release that
right.
if 14,000, and my buddy Ross Dellinger basically had a tweet saying he had conversations with athletic directors and with stadium architects, and basically that's the number.
So you can get 14, maybe you could get 14,000, maybe
sure.
you can get 10,000 in the Liberty Bowl, so you know, something like that, and then you have to decide if you can do it at all,
right?
If it's workable and if it's worth doing it, right?
Yes.
How much fun is it if you're going with that many fans, and if you you know, so anyway, really appreciated John coming on. Really appreciated Jennifer Biggs coming on. And now Chris Harrington is going to join us. After that, we'll lighten it up and play a little Righter Than Right, a little Married Edition trivia. It's Jeff Calkins' show on kind of a wild Thursday, 92.9 FM ESPN.
She serves two. Women make up about 16% of the American Armed Forces, and they've got a story to tell. From what it's like to wear the nation's military uniform.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.